I'm joined by Mike McCurry, who served as presidential press secretary during some of the most contentious moments in recent political history. As the face of the White House from 1994 to 1998, Mike was faced with questions the like of which few of his predecessors could even imagine. After a 35-year career in national politics, most recently Mike McCurry has been serving as professor and director at the Center for Public Theology at Wesley Theological Seminary. As the relationship between the current administration and the press continues to deteriorate, it's a rare privilege to be able to draw upon Mike McCurry's experience and expertise. And so, Professor McCurry, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
I'm humble enough to be chagrined at being called professor, but I appreciate the honorific.
Well, you've got it and you deserve it. What comes to your mind first when you look at the relationship between the White House and the press as it is today?
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind is it is by definition an adversarial relationship. Let me tell you a little bit about the geography at the White House in the West Wing. I think people are always fascinated by that. But the press secretary's office in the West Wing is exactly halfway between the Oval Office and then that briefing room where we often see the press secretary do the briefings for the press. And that is a metaphor for the job. You're halfway between the protagonists in this adversarial relationship with you got to keep the president happy, articulating the president's policies, but you actually also have to serve the press because they're there to be watchdogs and to hold accountable the people who are in power. And if you can't keep both sides of that equation basically happy, they're never going to be totally happy, then you're probably not going to be doing very well in the job.
So you can imagine the level of rancor that's going on right now in national politics?
Well, it's a despairing thing. And I'm now in the official business of praying about such things because I've never seen that level of acrimony and that level of contentiousness. And that worries me because, at some levels, when I was there, I had plenty of screaming matches with reporters and I didn't like what they were writing sometimes and they probably didn't like the way I was giving answers sometimes. But we basically could work through our differences and get through the day. And at the end of the day, you'd kind of go home and sort of say, okay, well, everybody did their job today. And I don't know that that's happening right now. And I think that's a real troubling thing for me that the people are – largely dissatisfied with this equation, and I think that's a troubling thing for us.
I don't mean to be redundant, but what do you think is causing this? What's different?
Well, there's a lot of differences. My daughter reminds me often that, well, Dad, you were famous as press secretary, but that was the last century.
It sounds like a daughter,
but it's a very telling comment because we did not have social media and Twitter and instantaneous access. We still had kind of a mainstream press that most people watched, tuned into to learn what was going on in the White House. And if you could, gather people together and get everyone to sort of have some basic level of understanding, most Americans would at least understand what was going on at the White House. Now everything is so fragmented and people are off into their own little universe of whatever websites or social media sites they go to or whatever information they get. Nobody's got this common base of knowledge. We don't gather around a common campfire with the griot sort of pronouncing what the community needs to know. And I think that's a big, big change. And, and it's driven by technology, driven by changes in the media, and frankly driven by some of the divisions and polarization that exist in our politics right now. And it's a troubling time.
I suspect there are things that the president, the press, and the public each lose in the midst of a toxic dynamic like we're experiencing now. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree. I think the main thing we lose is trust in our institutions. If you look, There's some great research done by the Pew Research Center. And they show that we are at an all-time low in trust of institutions, and it is across the board. It's organized religion, churches, small business, labor. You know, the only institutions that rank high in public trust are the military because they are just so exceptionally good at what they do. But most
and
of
nurses.
The and nurses
are at the top.
Although hospitals, medical, you know, the doctors, they have lost a lot of credibility. So the glue that holds our civil society together is really missing in a lot of cases, and I think that's that's something that I think the church needs to respond to. Mm-hmm. I think we all need to think about what are the things that draw us together and keep us together as one body, and we don't have many discussions like that. Particularly in Washington, where we are now, where everything is so polarized and divided.
I'm not asking for a critique. I think I'm asking more for an observation about how you feel about the role the political press is playing in the presidential campaign and now in the White House.
Well, you know, it's a hard question because the political press, as I mentioned earlier, has become completely disaggregated. In my time in the 1990s, there were a handful of very influential reporters, and they represented what we call the mainstream media, New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, you know, the major networks, a handful of others. And more or less, if that community came together to report a story, 90% of the country would have some access to it. We don't have that anymore because people are not tuning into any kind of mainstream news source. They kind of find the places where they are feel more comfortable. It very often confirms the bias that they have. We have what's called confirmation bias in the way in which people access news. So they only go and camp out in the places where they're kind of having their own views reinforced. And I think that makes a very, very difficult environment. Now, that said, there's extraordinarily good journalism done. And one of my strongest objections to our current president is when he calls the media dishonest. They're all dishonest. They're all bad. Well, then that impugns the integrity of people who I know. I know these reporters, and I know that most of them, you know, they may have their biases. In fact, most of their biases are socioeconomic. They actually came out of good Ivy League schools. They're smart. They've had privileged backgrounds. So they do have a little bit of that bias. But they're not politically biased. I mean, if there's a liberal bias in the media, I sure wish it had showed up when I was there. It would have made my life a lot easier. Yeah. But, you know, they try to do the job of reporting about what's going on. But when they are castigated and when people then doubt their integrity because the chief executive of the land says that they're dishonest, well, then we're eroding anything that kind of establishes a way in which we do business together. And that's just deeply troubling to me.
You had experiences of shouting matches with the media. How did you resolve that?
Well, a little bit of grace and the ability to ask for forgiveness if you got a little too overheated, and then recognition that everyone has a job. It's a very adversarial, contentious environment, and the press secretary always is going to have fights with the media that cover because you're never going to be totally happy with what gets reported. But at the end of the day, you know, the reporters would come up at the end of the day. Now, we had a different environment then. We had a news cycle. There was an ebb and flow. It wasn't this constant 24/7. You have to be tweeting nonstop all night long. It wasn't that kind of environment. So at the end of the day, we'd come up and I'd crack open a bottle of bourbon sometimes. Proved to be a good strategy.
I'm sure that goes good with grace.
Yes. And we'd sit together and just kind of talk off the record and clear the air.
Yeah.
And so we could go back and do battle the next day. And sometimes we'd just be equally fierce in doing battle the next day. But there was a harmony there because there was both sides recognized a professional obligation to keep focused on the most important thing, which is the American people need to have the truth. Mm-hmm. Now, most White Houses say if you just reported the truth about what we're doing, then we'd be fine because everyone would appreciate how great the president is and all the good things that we're doing. So, yeah. And the press would say, well, if you would just give us truthful, accurate information, we would be able to report the truth to the American people and we'd be happy. Yeah. So in theory, both sides want the same thing, sure. But it's when those things come in conflict that you get this contentious environment. But at the end, the truth matters. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, you probably saw the Time magazine cover recently, and you and I are old enough to remember that Is God Dead was a cover on Time magazine. Absolutely. And their recent cover was Is Truth Dead?
Yeah.
Well, if truth is dead, we are all dead. And I think that, that's pretty profound question to ask.
Did you see any quick solution to what's going on right now? And are we making too big a deal about this?
Well, no, we're not making too big a deal because these are fundamentally important to whether our little noble experiment in self-government called the United States of America is going to continue to last.
And it has to do with truth.
Because it has to do with truth. It has to do with people having good information that they can use to make decisions and knowing where to go to kind of sort out fact from fiction.
Yeah. So do you see any quick solutions?
Well, I've two. One is to slow down. The news media has always competed on the basis of speed. How fast can you get to breaking news? Like breaking news. Mm-hmm. Here's the breaking news. But sometimes we need to slow down and sort of let's get the facts right and let's value that. And we as consumers of news and information have to value that. Mm-hmm. So if you have to pay a little more money to get some product that's actually going to say, I know I've heard all this stuff that's on the internet, on the radio, on the TV, but I know there's one place that I can go that will sort it all out for me. And then when I read that, I'll know I've got the facts. Mm-hmm. Now that to me is journalism. Yeah. And we journalists, frankly, news organizations have gotten away from that primary responsibility to present facts because they're now getting all caught up in the opinion business. Yeah. And the other thing, and this is important, I spent some time on this, is to teach young people how to be what we call news literate. Young people, as they come up, baby boomers, we've kind of made our bed and we sleep in it. But young people who are coming up, if they can learn the techniques to be discerning in where they go to get information, mm-hmm. I have kids who are in their 20s now, and they're very pragmatic. They are not particularly ideological. They don't follow the liberal politics of their dad the time. So they think on their own, but they are looking and seeking. What's the real story on something? I get emails from my kids all the time. And, Dad, what's the real deal on such and such or this or that? And they want to, they don't want to know what my view or opinion is. Yeah. They just want to know, they're trying to sort out what fact and fiction is. Yeah. And I think if we can solve that problem by giving people sources that they trust, content that they trust, then we kind of rebuild a consensus around, okay, here are the facts, and then we can begin to sort out what our opinions are.
I want to switch gears for a moment. How did you get to Wesley Theological Seminary?
Well, it was a good, strong local pastor. So during my time at the White House, I actually did not work on Sundays. I took some good advice I got one time, which is never go on the Sunday talk shows, stay away from them. And so Sunday literally became my Sabbath. I took Sunday off. I don't think folks at the White House have that luxury anymore, and that's too bad. But I'd get up, I'd go to church. We live fortunately right across the street from our church, so we never had an excuse to bail out on meetings or worship services. Yeah. We'd go over, and it was a safe sanctuary for me. It was a quiet place, and my fellow members of my congregation were graceful and left me alone. They didn't ask me hey, what about the White House this week? Because I was in the news. They would see me on news pretty much every night. Sure. But they gave me a very, very safe space. And over time, I kind of, So I when I left the White House, actually, I left the White House in 1998, and my senior pastor came to me and said, well, now we're glad you're done with that because we have a real job for you. And I said, wait a minute. I thought I just had a real real job. And it was – it ended up they wanted me to become the superintendent of our Sunday school at church. Mm-hmm. And I was very flattered by that. I said, well, I'm just so delighted that you asked me to do this. I said, how did you happen to think that this was the right job for me? And Chet Kirk, our pastor, said, well, Mike, we haven't been able to get anyone to do that job for about 10 years. So it was a case where the you know, the job sought me out. And it was – but it was a great experience. And so I had to teach middle school. I tell you, if you want the most challenging assignment at a church is to teach middle school, Sunday school. And I realized I needed more information. So I kind of – I went and got involved at Wesley Seminary, took some courses that help equip lay leaders, went on their board of governors, got really involved in things there, got you know, one day someone said, why don't you take courses here? And I ended up getting a master's degree in theology. And then now was recruited to become a member of their faculty doing some work in politics and religion. But it's been a wonderful way to blend what I think is the most important thing, which is how does faith respond to issues in the public square? Yeah. So it's kind of combining my interest both in faith and in politics.
You know, Mike, and I'm sure this is true for you too, I am deeply concerned about what the torrid divisions in politics, and especially on Capitol Hill in the White House, what that's doing to people's understanding of government and civility and how we go forward. And so maybe one of the most important questions I will ask you today is this last one. Where do you get your hope?
Well, I get my hope from young people. They are not rigidly ideological. There, many of them are political. Mm-hmm. Some of them are political and they don't know it. They're involved in community organizing and volunteering to do things in their communities, and they're changing the face of their communities by the work that they do. And they disconnect that from what we would think of as electoral politics, because they think, frankly, electoral campaign politics is kind of yucky, and they don't want to be a part of it. But I, as I tell my kids and tell others, I say, you know, you are about changing the face of the way in which our community works, and so you need to stand up, and frankly, you need to begin taking power away from the baby boomers who have put us in this position of gridlock and partisanship. We're sitting here, we're two gray-haired guys, you know, who probably have fewer years ahead of us than behind us. And my hope is that the young people who are coming along begin to reject some of this partisanship and division and begin to find ways to work with each other. And I see enormous opportunities that give me hope, because I see young Christian evangelicals who care about the environment. They want to be good stewards of God's creation, working with younger, more progressive liberal kids on climate change and issues like that. I see a lot of interest in poverty. You know, people just understand that it's wrong for people to be hungry in America of all countries, and they're working together on things like that. So I take great hope that the change will be generational. It might take longer than we hope, but, you know, at the end, I'm very hopeful that the kingdom of God is, you know, in front of us and coming.
Mike McCurry is professor and director at the Center for Public Theology at Wesley Theological Seminary. Previously, his career in national politics spanned three decades and included 4 years as press secretary to President Bill Clinton from 1994 through 1998. Professor McCurry, I'm very grateful for you spending time with us today on State of Belief Radio.
That's great, and thank you for having me.